studios in Eugene, Oregon, it's Oregon Update with your hosts, Cliff and Robin. You can join Cliff and Robin by dialing 646-721-9887 or by email at talk@krbnradio.com. And now, here's your hosts, Cliff and Robin.
The stock market and I've fallen, I can't get up.
No kidding. Good morning. How are you today?
I'm doing good. My name's Robin. That's Cliff that's talking at me. You're listening to Oregon Update. Yeah, the stock market's down, the Dow's down 339 points so far today.
I tell you. Again. And you know, this is going to make some really big changes in how financing of everything in our country. I went to the doctor yesterday, and the clinic that I go to is talking about the possibility of losing their funding.
Oh, my God.
So they're already talking about it. It's, you know, and who knows what's going to happen. But, for example, they're already talking about the fact that your favorite subject, this $3 billion bridge or whatever it is on I-5, they're talking about not doing that because they're going to lose funding for that. So
tell me, how's that Hope and Change working out for you?
Well, we've got to change, and we're hoping to get rid of the change error. So who knows? You could put it that way.
Yeah, and speaking of the Hope and Change, as we were discussing just before the show, you were pointing out that our almighty Hope and Changer can't even show up on time for an appointment.
Well, you know, I noticed that yesterday, and I've noticed that a lot. I watch the networks, CNN and Fox, and I noticed for the last two or three of them that they've interrupted the other networks too as well. He tells them when he's going to be there, and they come up and they go on and they show this picture of the podium where he's going to be and everybody getting ready, and then they just sit there and wait and wait and wait and wait. And this time they waited an hour before he actually showed up. Usually it's 15, 20 minutes or so, but he's never on time. And these are appointments that he makes. This is he's the one that asked them for the time or told them what he was going to do, and they give him the time or whatever. But he sit there and they have to wait for him. Now, they have the rebuttal time for the Republicans, and they don't wait on that. They're almost always right there, even though they've got to listen to his speech and come up with an answer or rebuttal or whatever. So they actually have to write it. He's had plenty of time to write whatever he's going to do.
I get to see it, you know, because, again, since they're going live, I can picture the commentator doing it, a description, you know, like a golf commentator would, is, well, we're waiting for the president to come on board here. We have a pretty good picture of the podium, and if there's any activity on the podium, we'll definitely let you know. Oh, wait. I think, yes, it is. There's a fly. A fly just landed on the podium.
Well, you know, that would be a very good picture of what's going on, except that it's been so prevalent that they don't even bother to do that. They continue on with their news, and they split the screen and show the podium on one side, and then they do the news on the other side. And the major networks, CBS, ABC, NBC, go on with their regular programming until just before he actually, or just when he comes into the room, and then they interrupt the programming. So, which kind of makes me mad, too. I was watching Price is Right, and they ended up at the end of it, so I didn't get to see the last part of it. So
You didn't get to find out who got the car?
That's right. I didn't, and I was very upset about that because it was a really great, prize package that they were bidding on, and I didn't get to see who won it.
Well, what... Speaking of who won it, how will people get a hold of us if they decide they'd like to chime in today?
646-721-9887. Again, 646-721-9887. You know, it's interesting. I wrote that down on a piece of paper right at the very first when we started this program, which is what, like close to 2 years or something? And I still got the same little piece of paper sitting there that I can read. I never move it because I always forget it.
Yeah, and then when I called into the show when I was off, I forgot it, had to call Cliff on his personal phone and go, I want to talk to the show, Cliff. What's the number?
Well, I wouldn't remember if I walked out of the room. I mean, I tell you, the only reason I remember it is I've got this pink sheet of paper sitting there on the table that I leave in that same place, and we always, you know, we dust around it and clean around it and everything else, but it just stays there.
It just stays there. And also, speaking of, in addition to the ever-rememberable 646-721-9887, you can also join us right now in the chat room.
Oh, yes, I should bring up that other chat room, shouldn't I?
Room 2, yes. Bring it up on your monitor over there. And you can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, listen to us on iTunes. You can also send us an email at talk@krbnradio. And I do have an email I would like to share that we got from last week's show. And that is basically, last week we were talking about more the battle of the federal deficit and our version of what we can do about it. And we got an email from one of our listeners asking, how would you improve on this situation? Smaller government is definitely a start, but then what? And then how do you address the corruption?
Am I open to answer now?
You are, absolutely. Just jump right in there.
Oh, okay. Okay. First, it says smaller government is a part of the answer. Actually, smaller government is a huge part of the answer, because smaller government addresses also several other things in the problem. By going with a smaller government, you spend less money on each individual thing, and so basically, what we need to do is get rid of a lot of the different departments, I guess I'll call them, in the government. For example, education. We don't need a national education association in the government. There is just no necessity for that. Each state is charged with controlling their own education department. Each state has their own education association, and then we have the national education. NEA, what is that? National Education Association, but that's a union, and so we have that as well. So we don't need a federal department to work on education, because in a way, you could put out a little, I don't know if I'd want to call it a law or a bill or whatever, some sort of a thing stating certain specifications that need to be met in order for we already have that, in order for the education department to be accredited. So that's all we need as far as I'm concerned. So then there's so many of these things that we, you know, how many law enforcement agencies do we have that are duplicated all over the place? We have duplication on duplication of law enforcement, and that is one other place we could cut out a lot of spending. So by getting rid of these duplicative agencies in the federal government, we wouldn't have to spend the money to man them or do anything with them. But more than, I want to put out there that I'm not interested really in getting rid of jobs. If we get rid of different agencies and different organizations in the federal government, we have to get rid of the jobs that go along with them. I'd rather work on things where we need to adjust the payment, adjust the payroll. We need to adjust our federal payroll. We have, 60,000 people now on the federal budget, on the federal payroll, and they're all making approximately twice as much as the civilian version of the same thing does. So that needs to be changed and adjusted. There's no reason for our federal people to be making so much more money than, I'm trying to not say normal folk. That's still what it is. Their retirement fund, all of that is hugely larger than the civilian population, and so we need to get that brought down. So that's and you say, well, then why not bring the civilian money up? The reason for that is because, think about this. And this is the most important thing we've got to think of all, and this is the one thing that's going to happen whether we like it or not. One way or another, we're going to either do it on an orderly manner, or it's going to happen to us just whap-o bang, and it's going to make everybody upset and everybody sad. But we have got to change so that we are competitive with the rest of the world. We are not competitive with 80% of the rest of the world. Our payroll is so high that and how Boeing does it, I don't know. But if you go out and you manufacture something, we have spent so much money in payroll and so much money in other places because our wages and things are so high that we can't be competitive. We have to send these factories and manufacturing of different things overseas in order to make it competitive, in order to be able to afford to manufacture things. And we wonder and we get upset, why are all these jobs going overseas? That's because we can't afford to hire them here, because we've artificially made our standards so high, and it isn't necessary to do that. So and everybody's upset about these different states calling it busting the unions or whatever you want to. The unions are one of the things. Of course, again, it's not the union's fault, because the federal government has helped, and so have the companies. They give in. Basically, we've got to stop this spiraling out of control of the wages that the unions are demanding. So that's two of the things that we can do. We've got to stop our wages from going up and make it more equitable to balance with the rest of the world. And then we've also got to change what we're spending on our government, the actual money we're spending in the government. And then we've got to change radically the amount of money that the government gives away. So there's three things. Anybody else?
Well, the EPA, for example, this is recent. I think it was yesterday it came out that Obama wants the I'm kind of reading and talking at the same time, like chewing gum. They want fuel efficiency on the big rigs to go up 20% by the year 2018. Well, okay, that's just the same thing with the automotive fuel economy. I forget what the date was they said on that. It's like saying, okay, we're going to change physics tomorrow.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it's great to have a target, but unfortunately the end results, like for example, in the trucking industry, the change of the EPA rules, Caterpillar, for example, that used to make engines for the big rigs, stopped doing it anymore because they can't. It was too costly for them to try and meet the standards. And so other companies who have either done a redesign or they add this DEF to the mixture to try and get the emissions down to where they're supposed to be. The point is that it's caused a lot of companies to go under or increased the operating cost of companies to try and stay in business.
Well, you know, I still think we probably have the ability to get better mileage, and we have, even out of the diesel engines and the big rig engines, I'm pretty sure we probably could. I know, for example, I've found out recently that the standard automobiles, they have the ability to get much better mileage than we do. For example, I just discovered that Ford. And of course, I keep picking on Ford or picking out Ford, not picking on them, because I'm really impressed with what they're doing. The Lincoln has an automobile that gets like almost 40 miles to the gallon. It's a hybrid. I didn't know there was a Lincoln hybrid, but Ford just quietly keeps manufacturing these hybrids and putting them on the market without even saying much of anything about them. But I did see an ad that mentioned just briefly as it was going in the ad that there was a Lincoln hybrid out there that does get really good mileage. Well, I'm just impressed that they, because Ford now, I don't know how many they make, but I would venture to say they're making about 8 or 10 hybrid cars. And just, they don't make a big hullabaloo about it, but they just simply do it. Other people make a big thing about the fact that they've got a hybrid car. I don't know if Chrysler even has one yet, but Chrysler, I think, is going to go a different way since Fiat is running them. But I know General Motors is making a big hullabaloo about the Volt, and I don't even know if those are even being delivered yet. I don't think they're even.
Yeah, they're being delivered, but they're the people that have them. Some love them, of course, but others are finding disappointment where it says that it has enough charge for another 75 miles, and then 30 miles later they're out of electricity.
I've heard that too. That it does only go about 40 miles, even though they've said it goes more. There are other cars on the market that do go farther. There's a couple of small cars that go up to 100 miles on a charge. But and they, of course, they always give you a maximum of 100 miles on a charge, which means that about 70 or 80 miles will start running down. But still, that's considerably more than the Volt does. And I think they're still already way, way behind in delivering the Volt to anyone. I saw them give away one on The Price is Right or something like that the other day. So they must be out there somewhere.
That's not The Price is Right, sure.
Well, that's important because that's a huge amount of advertising for them, I'm sure, if they give away a Volt. But
if you advertise it, batteries not included.
That could be a real interesting thing. I wonder how much the batteries cost for the Volt. I bet they're really expensive.
Well, and that's the biggest deal right there is batteries and how to dispose of them. Not to mention the fact that what is I think it was AAA that did a survey recently on how long people are keeping cars, and the fact that one out of three car owners can afford a sudden repair of $2,000. So how long are these cars estimated to last for?
Well, the batteries are figured in at 10 years, by the way. Within 10 years, you're going to have to replace the batteries, and that's going to be a major, major expense. And, of course, again, if they say within 10 years, that means probably 7 or 8 years, because that's the way they do it. They give you the very best possible outside numbers, and then you're not ever going to see those as a general rule. But do you know how much a Volt costs?
$46,000?
Yeah. That's an awfully expensive automobile. That's a really expensive automobile. I know the Ford offerings are not anywhere near that high for their hybrids, not anywhere close to that. And, for example, what is it, the little Honda, is that what it is? The Leaf?
Yeah.
Is only like $28,000 or something like that. It's less than half of what the Volt is. For $45,000, I can go buy can't think of the name of it. There's a company out there that puts out two major offerings, and they've been selling them, and they've been on the market and available for like 5 or 6 years now. But their most expensive one is like $100,000, but they've come out with a lesser expensive one that's only about $45,000 or $50,000. But that goes 100 miles on a charge, and it's electric only. So
exactly. Well, like you pointed out, like Volkswagen has I think it's a 3-cylinder diesel that gets around 40 to 50 miles to the gallon, is cheaper, about $10,000 to $15,000 cheaper than the hybrid, and beats the EPA requirements. So it can be done if a little bit of engineering is put behind it. And one thing that America is good for, when there's a challenge that's given to them, especially if there's money behind it, like like DARPA likes to do from time to time, if people got together and made it a challenge with a nice hefty reward, we can come up with a completely different system.
A completely different system we probably could come up with. I think the logic behind what's going on, there's a couple of things that are going to make a change in the world. For one, there are several cars out there that get 50 and 60 miles to the gallon. There's a couple of them, little cars now that we're talking about that are not even hybrid or even electric. There are a couple of regular engines. Regular engines that are getting 50 and 60 miles to the gallon right now. Fiat is going to come in to the United States with one since they took over Chrysler. They're going to be introducing a car I believe, in this next year that gets like 50 miles to the gallon on regular gasoline, and it's a gasoline only. It's not a hybrid or anything. So that's going to make a huge difference. And there are a couple of them out there already doing that. There are several in Europe that are doing that sort of thing. So you're getting up around 50 and 60 miles a gallon. That's a huge change from what we've been accustomed to. And because I drive a car that's not that old, but it's only getting like 22 miles on the gallon on its best day on the highway. It's a little bigger car than that. And then I drive a little Ford Escort that gets closer to 35 miles a gallon. And that's real practical. But if we could get even double of or close to double of that, 50 and 60 miles to the gallon, that's a huge difference. And that could save a lot of money. You know, that puts a different situation, too, in that we need to be making cars, and I think they are now, but it should need to be a law made that all cars have to be, what do they call it, capable of running on all different fuels. In other words,
fuel cars. Yeah, I've actually seen one on the road the other day.
Yeah, flex fuel cars, but they need to all be made. They need to be a requirement that they're all made to accomplish that from now on. There are a lot of them out there. There are hundreds of thousands of flex fuel cars, and I know there are. But methanol is the big thing now. I've been a huge pusher of algae. That doesn't seem to have caught on as much as I'd like to have. But methanol can be made out of all kinds of different things. The biggest thing we've got to do is stop pushing ethanol, because ethanol takes food out of our mouths. Methanol does not. It can be made with different things, and methanol can be used anywhere that ethanol can, and either one of those can be used in any car. If it were a flex fuel car, that can be just used immediately. If it's not a flex fuel car, it doesn't take a whole lot of adapting to make the car run on methanol totally, and it does make a huge difference and because it's all renewable. Methanol is all renewable fuel and can be made all in the United States. We have to it adds huge amount numbers of jobs to the United States, and it doesn't send any money overseas. Right now, all of our most of our energy money, the way I'll put it, is sent overseas to our, even if it's American companies. The money still goes overseas to get the oil, and we're not drilling new oil for new oil in the United States. We are actually more now than we ever have in the past, but we're still way behind what we should be doing. But the thing is, let's stop drilling oil, and we've got two things we can go for. We can start manufacturing methanol, which is totally renewable, or we can, and probably even fast, well, at least as fast as that, would be getting the natural gas out of the ground. They've got several different ways of getting natural gas, some of which you have to drill way down. Some of it, I guess, is what they call it, shale oil, shale gas or something like that. It's not that far underground. But there are different ways of getting it, and we have huge, huge abundance of natural gas in the United States. We wouldn't have to send any of that money overseas. And we've got to consider what money we're sending overseas, because we're sending way too much. And but then we've also got to consider equalizing paychecks so that everything is available to everyone. Do you realize, just something to throw in here, I just saw earlier today that we are still giving China money. We are still, what do you want to call it, giving them money in terms of billions of dollars, while at the same time we're borrowing money from them, which we're paying interest on. We're giving it to them free, but we're borrowing some that we're paying interest on in order to give it back to them for free.
Well, on top of that, I can't remember what country we loaned money to that China and Russia didn't want to loan money. But the point is, it gets down to, is why are we loaning money when we are in such debt ourselves?
Well, you know, the other thing I saw in this same story that was talking about the fact that we are loaning China money, I will have to say we're subsidizing China, but so is Japan and Germany and France and Britain. So Japan, Germany, France, Britain, and the United States are all giving China money, or foreign aid to China, to the amount of like $2.6 billion a year. So we're all giving them money, but we're borrowing money from them and paying interest on it. You know, that's a rather ideal situation to be in. People give you the money, and then you loan it back to them and charge interest. That's even better than being a bank. I mean, I don't know how to put myself in that position. I got to figure out how to get the government to give me money so I can loan it back to them. But China's doing it, and how they did it is a good question. But they're doing it.
Speaking of doing it, since we're coming up on the first half hour of the program, again, I want to throw out the phone number, 646-721-9887. And also mention that this half of the show is sponsored by Dancing Dog Cookies. Make your dog dance with Dancing Dog Cookies. Check them out on the web at www.dancingdogcookies.com.
Meow.
Good dog, Skippy. Yes, Skippy is a very good dog, and I always enjoy working with him and like to reward him for a great performance. However, I am always hesitant and very selective in the types of treats that I will give him because I worry about his health and only want to give him something that's really good for him. That's why I always reward him with Dancing Dog Cookies, because they are handmade to order from all natural ingredients and preservative-free. Plus, they come in a wide variety of styles and flavors. Skippy loves them, and I'm sure you will too, so check them out at www.dancingdogcookies.com.
And I don't think that they're made for cats, but check them out. They look really cool, and dogs love them.
I was watching the dog waltz the other day. It was very nice.
Yeah. I wanted to throw out here, looking at the news, and I guess you want to touch a little bit on Walden. Boehner and Pelosi axe House Pages, which is a 169-year-old tradition, I guess. The House Page program exceeded $5 million. I want a job doing this. They're saying that it pays between $69,000 to $80,000 per page.
I was under the impression that these were high school kids that went in there and did that most of the time for nothing.
No, not according to this.
They probably have pages that they pay. But $69,000 a year nowadays, it sounds like a lot. It's a little over the budget, but it's not that much. I mean, that's why we've got to change the amount of money we're paying people, because $69,000 a year has become almost a standard, an average paycheck, and that's way higher than we can afford to have going on, because at that kind of money, we can't afford – and this is not a manufacturing position, but if it were a manufacturing position – we couldn't afford to sell what we're manufacturing at that point, because we're paying way too much money to build it. So that's why we're not you know, I keep hearing these presidential candidates and other people saying, well, we've got to bring back manufacturing into the United States. You're not going to do that until you attack or tackle the wage and benefits position in the United States. That's what's got to change first, because you can't manufacture things at the kind of price that we're manufacturing and make it competitive.
Well, and big business, they're sitting on their money because of the uncertainty, like Obamacare and other situations, and they're not going to expose themselves into a big financial risk to open up a factory or whatever on an uncertain economy.
Well, you know, there's even more to it than that. We keep talking about big businesses sitting on their money. That's actually a misnomer, because we don't know what they're doing with that money. And the fact that they're not spending it is granted. They're not spending it in the United States because of the financial unrest that the United States is in. And as long as we have this particular group of people in the White House and making the rules, we're not going to have a long-term anything. And as long as we don't have long-term anything, granted, if I was a business, I wouldn't want to do much of anything in the United States, because you're never going to know what's going to happen 2 years down the road to change what you're doing. And you may do something and then find out you can't afford it because they've changed the rules on you. So we've got to have the rules running a little bit longer than we're doing at the moment.
And what is this with changing a law, and we've done this in Oregon, changing a law or adding a tax and then making it retroactive for 1 or 2 years back?
Well, of course, I that's, I guess, you know, I see nothing wrong with making it retroactive, although actually I can't believe that it should be.
Well, why should it be retroactive at all? If you pass a law today, why should it be retroactive if you are going, you know, you create a tax today and, oh, we're going to make it retroactive for the last year and a half. It's like, how can you do that? I mean, that's all of a sudden businesses have to come up with a year and a half's worth of increased taxes that they totally were not able to plan on, much less that how it's legal.
The biggest problem with something like that is they're not going to. They're not going to come up with that money because they've already not paid it. Why would they have, what incentive do they have to pay it? They have absolutely none whatsoever. So you're going to have more and more people that are going to be flaunting the law and breaking the law because you've made it a stupid law and impossible to honor. And that is, you know, that doesn't make any sense to me. I was just going to say the only way I would see that be acceptable to anyone is if they put it as put it to the public and let everybody vote on it. If everybody said it's okay to do that, that's one thing. But if it's just the Senate or the House or someone like that making up their mind to make that law, then that should be against the law. I agree with you that it should be. But then there's so many things that we're doing. You know, that's raising taxes. That's one of the things. Excuse me. That's one of the things we should not do, and we've made that abundantly clear. Everybody seems to be making that abundantly clear, and yet we're not thinking about it. Let's not raise taxes. Let's stop spending money. And we've got a government in office at the moment that most of them feel spending money is the only way to do things, and that's, you know, we've got to make government smaller, and that's where we started this whole discussion on this afternoon, or this morning, was making government smaller, and we have to do that. That's the thing you've got to do, is you've got to stop spending money, and making government smaller is stopping spending money. And
well, so in the recent days of the debt negotiations, for example, and one of the reasons for the S&P downgrade, is the bickering back and forth of our representatives and Obama. In fact, they're saying that even though the S&P downgraded their AAA rating down to AA, they're saying, well, as far as we're concerned, we still got the AAA rating. I mean, these guys, they're a bunch of greedy people trying to get more and more money out of us. They don't have their act together. They're acting like a bunch of children. They're blaming everybody except for looking at, well, like the old saying, and whenever you point a finger at somebody, you got three other fingers pointing back at you, is that quit playing the games and get to work and do your job.
Well, unfortunately, what we have done is we have nurtured a group of demigods in the House and the Senate. We've allowed the bureaucracy or the hierarchy or whatever you call it of the United States to believe that we are the controlling factor of the world. And the simple fact of the matter is we have been mismanaging everything so badly for so long that we are no longer the managers of the world. The world is recognizing the fact that we're screwing up. And so they're taking over. The thing is that I've been reading, I've been looking at all of this situation, and the entire Western, you know, Western world has had this problem. I mean, it's not just us. There are many other countries in the Western world that are already financially falling apart because they've got the same idea that we do. We're right and everybody else is wrong. The thing is, there's more of the wrong than there are of the right. And so we've got to either work harder at being right or we've got to accept the fact that we aren't that right. And so things have got to equalize out. Again, I keep using that word. We've got to equalize things out, and there's lots of ways we can do that, but the most important way is the fact that you know, well, there's some major things going on.
How about if we just throw a committee at it?
Throw a committee at it?
Yeah, we'll just throw a committee at it. I mean, we had the Gang of Six, and now we got the
Gang of 12.
Super Committee. This is our government, folks. Follow their examples.
Why do we think that we're going to do anything with this super committee? Let's face it, when Obama first took over, he did the Gang of Six, or not the Committee of Six. That was before it was called the Gang of Six. But he formed this committee of six people who spent a year or so coming up with this solution, and they came up with a very good solution, as a matter of fact, and then gave it to Obama, and he tabled it immediately. It didn't do it exactly. It didn't give him as much control as he wanted. It didn't give him the right to do anything he wanted to do, and so he tabled it. And that made all those people mad, and I don't blame them. And so they just kind of sat back and said, to hell with you, for quite some time, until this one guy came along with an idea and submitted it with the Gang of Six, and it left everything wide open and left Obama with the ability to do whatever he wanted to do. So consequently, he approved of it. Of course, there was nothing really on paper. There was nothing really written down or specified, because it wasn't really a House resolution or a Senate resolution. It was just a suggestion, basically. It's all it was. So, of course, Obama accepted that and said, this is great. This is a great idea. Let's do this. And, of course, fortunately, he didn't get it. But there's only been two actual resolutions submitted that have specifics that go with them, and those are the two House resolutions, both of which were sent to the Senate and were totally tabled and vetoed by Obama. I don't know if he even read them or not. He may have, but they aren't so long that he couldn't have read them. And, you know, they weren't 2,000 pages or anything like that. But anything that doesn't give him full control, total control, he vetoes. So, you know, he keeps talking about compromise. But compromise to him means, as long as you'll do it my way, that's okay. You've got to compromise your position and do it my way, and then we'll do it. But if we don't, he's not willing to compromise or not willing to give in much of anything. He finds a few little things that he can agree with them on and calls that compromise, but it's not.
Well, the other thing going on, reading the news, with everything going on in the government right now in our economy, shouldn't Congress still be in session working on it?
No, I don't think so. I mean, there is a point. Congress is, you've got to understand, senators and representatives do have work to do in their own state as well. I mean, we don't just send them off to Washington, D.C. and forget about them. They actually do need to come back and to touch base with the people in their constituency and talk to them and find out what they want and what they don't want. And so that's one of the things that they should be doing during this period of time, is they should be coming back here and meeting with their local people and find out what the local people want them to do, and then go back and perhaps do that. Not that they do, because we've all this. If you sit and look at the polls, 80% of the people assume that congressmen are going to lie to them. I mean, about everything. We hire them, or vote for them, if you wish, to go and do our bidding or what we want them to do, and then they just go and do whatever they want to anyway. Once they get there, to hell with us. I'm in office now, and I can do whatever I want to. And so, you know, they're...
Well, I was going to say they pretty much assume that, because that's they've demonstrated that's what they're doing.
That's right, and that's why we've got to change. That's what happened in 2000, the last election, is we did make a lot of changes because people were not listening to what we sent them to Congress for. And so that's why the Tea Party, for example, is getting blamed for an awful lot of stuff, because a lot of the people at the Tea Party helped get into office, and they went into office in this last election. They are actually trying to do what their constituents asked them to do, and that's a different, that's a change in attitude in that group of people as compared to the original group of people. And so consequently, people are blaming the Tea Party. Well, if that's the case, I'm blaming the Tea Party too, except that I like the idea. I'm blaming the Tea Party from actually doing something and accomplishing something at this particular point. That's why we've got to wait for the next election and get rid of the other three quarters of the people and put Tea Party people in there too, because we've got to get Congress people. It's not men anymore. It's all kinds of people, but we've got to get people in there who will do what we want them to do, and they've got to be listening. So to send them home for a month and to listen and, you know, go around, and I'm hoping that they do that. Not all of the Congress people do that, I'm sure, but I'm hoping that they will do that and go back with an idea, because we've got to get control. See, we've lost control of our government. That's because we hire them or we vote them in and then just let them do whatever they want to. Yeah, but we've got to pay more attention.
There's no checks and balances. But I was going to add real quick here is that former Lane County Commissioner Cindy Wildreyer, who's been on our panel many times, part of the roundtable, she's off on assignment now, has gotten to the point that she's telling me, Robin, quit hassling me, because I ask her many a times, why did you guys vote for this? And she says, well, because in my best conscience, I had to vote that way, despite what everybody else is wanting me to do.
Yeah, you know, that sounds good and bad at the same time. I mean, you can vote your conscience, but you better damn well sit back and decide what your conscience is. If it's totally different, if it's totally opposed to your constituents and the people who put you in office, then you shouldn't be there. Because if your conscience is not what the majority of people in your area think it should be, then you're voting the wrong way. Sorry. I mean, I understand that not every situation can come up before you go into office. You've got to have some logic of your own that you can fall back on. But if you vote one way and find out that everybody in your area of being voted in, whatever it happens to be, disagrees with you, then you've made a mistake, folks, ready or not. And because, you know, whether the people in your area, I don't know what else to call it because there's different names for it, but if the people who voted for you think one way and you think another, then you shouldn't be there. But they also, either you lied to them before going and before getting the votes, or they didn't pay attention enough or investigate enough to find out who you really are. But someone has to, and that's where I agree with you, that there has to be an easier way, once we voted people in, since they don't do what we want them to do, has to be an easier way to change them, to remove them from office and put somebody else in there.
Well, and like you've said many a time, the political system, our representatives, has to be changed from a career position.
Well, that's the bureaucrats, yeah. You know, the important thing is, I again am going to push for single term anything, because once you get in there, your job should be to do your job. It should not be fundraising and worrying yourself about how you're going to get to the next elected to the next term. And if you can run for another term, that's what you're going to be doing all the time you're in there. You're going to be considering, what can I do this, because, or will that make people mad at me and I won't get elected again? And so we've got to eliminate that position of always being on the lookout of being elected again, because that's all you do. You worry about being elected instead of actually doing your job. So we've got to make it a one term. Maybe we can make it 6 years or adjust that. I don't know, but I think 4 years is enough. But for 4 years, if you could actually go in there for 4 years and worry about doing your job for 4 years without having to worry about raising money or worry about being reelected or worrying about anything else except doing the bidding of the people who elected you, that's the only thing you should be worried about. But that's the only way to do that is to make it everything one term. Simple as that.
Well, here's an idea. How about also throwing out, okay, like as an employee for a company, you have annual reviews that you have to go through. You know, how was your performance? Did you meet the standards? Or, you know, what can you improve on? What if we also added that scenario at least to our representatives?
You know, that is a thought, except that that's adding a cost. There's going to be an awful lot of money involved into to coming up with the what test or whatever you want to call it to test whether they're doing the job right or wrong, and then administering it and all that sort of thing. I think if we just made the single term limit, then if they've not done it right, they're out of there anyway, and that's just all there is to it. But we do need to address the possibility of making it easier to impeach or remove or whatever. You're right. But I don't think it's something that we should be doing every year or anything like that.
Well, I do know that, like especially based on the 2010 elections, we were talking earlier about when Congress and stuff is not in session, that they go back to their hometowns, that I can't remember which elected official it was, an Oregon official, I believe, that was so scared of having a town hall meeting because they were really angry at him. And that's what a lot of these people are going to be facing now, and that's kind of stating that in the news, that they're going back home, and a huge amount of people are showing up to these town hall meetings, you know, the unemployed and whatever, are just really mad at the representatives.
Well, and that's good, in my opinion, because it's about time we get mad enough to start showing up at meetings or writing to people about changing things, because now's the time to change things. They're going to change one way or another, but let's come up with an orderly way to do it instead of waiting until the economy collapses entirely and then having to do it, because that's what we're headed for. The economy is just going to totally collapse, and everybody's going to be in trouble, and then it's all going to start building back up again, and we'll be equalizing out. But the only concern that I have is that if we're not in this alone. If this was just the United States and it were to collapse and we could work on coming back, that's one thing. But we've got many other countries out there that are in the same dire straits that we are. And why don't we learn from what's going on? I mean, there are a couple of countries, Germany for one, is not in that much of trouble as we are. Why aren't we learning from them or a couple of countries that have figured it out more or less? Why don't we sit back and learn from them? We don't learn from them. What's happening to our health care? I mean, why aren't we looking at what's happening in Europe? None of Europe has a health care system like we do. It's all a government controlled thing. And it isn't all bad.
Pages long.
Say again?
And it's probably not 2,000 pages long.
Well, it's not. As simple as that.
And they probably read the bill. Why read the bill?
That's true. And that's there's so many places where we've got to go. Again, I get back to priorities. Where do we start? What do we do to start? One of the things we can do to start is we've got to come up with enough money to figure out how to put our economy back together again. And, for example, right now we're spending $25 billion in foreign aid per year. $25 billion, when you start looking at it as adjusted to the federal government income of $2.7 trillion, is a minuscule amount. But $25 billion could go a long ways to financing reform in any particular part of our government, and in all parts of it for that matter. $25 billion is actually a lot of money.
You're exactly right. We got to, sorry to interrupt, but we have to start taking it's like the old adage that you can't help your neighbor if you can't help yourself.
And that's what we're doing. We're helping our neighbor before we're helping ourselves. That's why I'm saying that's the first thing we need to change, is that $25 billion in foreign aid. I mean, we're talking about $2.6 billion going to China. We don't need to be giving China foreign aid, folks. We don't need to do that. China's lending us money. We don't need to be giving them foreign aid. We're talking about them passing our economy in 10 years and being the number one economy in the world. Why are we giving the world's number one economy foreign aid? What kind of idiots are we?
I don't know. What are our choices? On what type of idiots we are. But
I was going to say, you're going to say, what kind of choices do we have? We have the choices not to give them $2.6 billion.
Well, and that...
Yes, how, you know, I sit here, and I've been railing and railing on that, but how is it that Japan, Germany, France, and Great Britain are as stupid as we are? How has that happened?
Well, if you also take a look, like, say, within the example, I get so tired of, you know, we're in a crisis situation financially in the way our government's going, and I get so tired of hearing, well, you know, if we can just get along with the other side of the aisle, and President Obama saying, I'm going to take some representatives from both sides, and maybe we can have a truce between them, we can all get along. It's like, you know what? Get over it! You're there for one reason.
Well, that's your right, and technically, they're there so they don't get along. The idea is there needs to be some conflict there so that we can compromise. The difference being the word compromise to the White House means you do it my way.
Well, that's very true. I agree with you on that, and that's why I was saying that a lot of times you really don't know how somebody is in a job or in the office until they hit a crisis situation. Obama, in my opinion, during the debt negotiations, and I don't know why or where the August 2nd deadline came from, but he basically, to me, acted very childish during the whole scenario. And what really scares me is that, okay, what happens, like when Bush Jr. was in charge, you know, we actually had an attack on the U.S., What would Obama do if something really serious came along like that?
he would print up a couple trillion dollars more money and put us $2 more trillion in debt. That's what he would do. I mean, that's the thing. A lot of people are blaming former President Bush for doing a lot of this. Well, it's true. One of the wars, I believe, was his fault and didn't need to happen. That was Iraq. I don't think that needed to happen. Afghanistan, however, was started before him or at the beginning or whatever, but that would have started no matter what. And, of course, the big expense was the bombing in 2001, and that's where the big expense started coming in. That's where we started spending way more money. They're talking about two unfinanced wars. Well, there's no such thing as an unfinanced war. It's financed if you've paid for it. And so, you know, coming up with the money or borrowing the money is another story. But the thing is, the simple fact of the matter is, I've heard a couple of, I've listened to some talk shows at night. Oh, wow. But I have, and I heard this lady go on and on about how the Republicans' administration screwed everything up in the last couple of years and all the money that they spent. But the simple fact of the matter is you didn't have any choice. What are you going to do with that whole thing when you've got the country being attacked? And that was a pretty major attack in 2001, 9/11, whatever you want to call it. That was a pretty major attack that we come up with. And you don't go back and just let that happen and let it go on and say nothing because you don't happen to have the permission of the Senate and the House to pay for it. You've got to pay for it, period. That's the War Powers Act, and you've got to be able to pay for that. But then we did go on and do this. They've instituted so many more organizations, and we're funding them, and we didn't need to do quite that much. Nothing really has changed that much. That one attack is one thing, and we need to take care of that, but we didn't need to change everything about how we did things in the country because of that. And we did run off and get panicked and change an awful lot of things, and we're spending a lot of money now that we really don't need to spend. And so, and we've changed laws. We've actually changed some laws as to to who the kind of how what kind of things our government can do about, you know, foreign, about search and seizure and all this kind of stuff. A lot of those laws have been changed, and we panicked, and we that means they won, folks. And I don't like that idea. We should not have panicked, and we need to get control of our government again.
Well, that's one thing I was just going to throw in there is that, speaking of panic, the way President Bush handled the news while he was reading to that classroom, he did it very well. He didn't show any emotion or anything like that to have panic. And, you know, went out and did it. I wonder how Obama would do the same thing. You know, if he was reading to the kids or doing something like that and somebody came up and said, sir, you know, the U.S. is under attack, if he would have the same demeanor, I guess is what I'm saying.
Well, you know, it's hard to say, and I don't really think he would have. He would have been jumped up and given some sort of a thing on television, a speech on television, blaming everybody for it, except himself, of course. And I really would not like to have something like that happen while he's president. I really would like nothing else to happen while he's president. But that's another story. We need to do a lot about getting him out of there and putting someone else in. And
I can just see what's happening. Oh my God, we're under attack! Quick, where's the computer? I want to tweet about this.
Yeah. Really, you know, that gets into something else about his use of the current day's systems in the internet. I will have to say he has done a lot for using the internet. Sometimes we've gotten some older people into those offices, and they resist with the newest and most.
Yeah. Well, one thing I want to throw in there, I don't want to stay on that topic very long, but. Yeah, it is kind of cool that, you know, the public can write in and ask the president questions, but what is kind of funny is some of the questions they ask, like, you know, boxers are brief. It's like, come on.
The age-old question, yes. Right. Well, you know, the thing is, we should, at this point, and this is going to be contrary to everything I've said, but at this point we do need to adjust our system in the White House and in Washington, D.C., and have people monitoring Twitter and all of these things to find out what people are asking and to perhaps answering some of those questions and having a whole group of people on staff that can answer them legitimately rather than just whatever. As it is, people are asking these questions and somebody's answering them and we don't know who's answering them. So we need to come up with some sort of a legitimate place we can ask questions and get legitimate answers. But, it certainly can't be the president sitting down and reading all of this stuff and making the answers.
But they can compile and get similar questions or similar concerns. And, you know, it would be, you know, that they could take, summarize in less than 2,000 pages to the president and get an answer for a response. But, you know, you're right. Using technology can help make the government a little bit more responsive. In fact, in a way, thanks to technology, it has affected that. It has made it a little bit more responsive. Same with the Tea Party, which they're trying very hard to kill because that is more of a people representative. And they don't like anybody messing up with their game, and that's pretty much what's going on. But
well, I'm really hoping the Tea Party literally becomes a third party because we need a tiebreaker party.
I agree. I definitely agree with you, especially in the way things are going with the economy and in the government and in the world. Because in the 21st century, especially with high-speed communications, the world has changed. We're no longer separated by the ocean. I mean, we are just, you know, we're there.
Well, and that's technology. The world has definitely gotten, as they say over and over again, the world has gotten smaller. It has gotten smaller because I can talk to anybody in the world in a matter of seconds now. I don't have to send a letter. I don't have to make a whole page up in the newspaper and then print it and send it overseas or whatever. This is a worldwide thing that's going on, and it's instant. I mean, you and I are talking right now on the internet. And doing this show, and anybody in the world can listen to it as we say it. I mean, it's not a matter of even, it's just a matter of seconds I grant you, there is a little bit of a delay. We hear it all the time, but it's only a matter of a few seconds delay. It's not anything else. So it's just well as instantaneous. And look at the different wars now in Egypt and wherever that are only possible because of the internet and because of Twitter and Facebook and all these things. They're the way they communicate with people, and it's gotten prevalent enough that they can't even, I guess they could turn it off. China talks about turning off the internet in various places. If they do that very often, I will guarantee you that they'll find ways of putting up a system that gets around the government, and they can talk to each other, and they'll have problems. That's why China is being, I think, a lot more liberal than they have ever been, because they're understanding the fact that if they're not going to be that liberal, then they've got an awful lot of people there to get mad at them.
Well, one of the countries did actually cut off the internet to try and, you know, keep information from getting out, and people, like you said, people found a way around it. The U.S. itself wants to have a kill switch for the internet.
And that's what I'm saying. If they had a kill switch, which China does, and they can do that, but and other countries have tried doing that, but even in Egypt they did cut it off. But you can't cut it off entirely. It's for example, if I wish to talk to my next door neighbor, I can do that. No matter what you do, I can do that with the Wi-Fi thing. I can talk to my next door neighbor, or even in some instances a block down the road. But then if that guy talks to a person a block down the road, they can all do all of this, and there's no way the government can stop them, basically. And so sooner or later, they're going to work up a system that can be worked around whatever the government or whoever is making the decisions is doing. So there will be ways around it. It will sprout up if they don't. If they cut it off, it'll happen. They'll work around it. And so it's changed the way the world looks at things. It's changed the way the world works. And like it or not, that's just going to have to be the thing. I mean, we've got major governments that are basically toppling at this point in Syria and Libya and all these places. And I'm sure it has a lot to do with the internet and the fact that they're getting information that they didn't have before. And communications becomes a major thing. Plus the fact some of these, like in Egypt, they went ahead and educated an awful lot of people. And when people become educated, they actually somehow or another decide to use their brain instead of just being sheep. And consequently, they don't necessarily agree with what their government is doing.
Yeah, the brain, the mind is a terrible thing to waste.
Well, it depends on what point you're looking at it. If you're the government and trying to get to people to do what you want to, the mind is a terrible thing to release. Scary.
Exactly. Something I want to just change gears here for just a moment, a little bit closer to home in Oregon, more so towards Lane County, and we're talking about government funding. The state of Oregon has told Lane County that it has to come up with another $1 million for its workman's comp insurance, because Lane County is self-insured. And because of that, they're going to be cutting. We just recently cut sheriffs down to 20 hours a week, or day, rather, where some of the officers are responding from their home, and other cuts going on. And they said that to come up with the money, they're going to have to take more cuts from the sheriff's department, close more beds on the jail, and cut more benefits. What's your opinion on that?
Well, we're going to have to learn how to do our fiscal thing at home radically different, and it is being forced onto us at home. I mean, I'm sure that they'll consider ways of adding taxes. Although in the state of Oregon, you can't just, the Lane County can't just add a tax here and there and everywhere and make it work. There are only certain things they can do. But we do have to consider perhaps reevaluating how we do business in the sheriff's department, every other department in the government of Lane County. So we have to reevaluate how we're doing business and perhaps do it more frugally than we have in the past. But I don't know. There's a point where there's going to be a change in how we can acquire money, and it's going to open up how many different things they can tax and what changes they can make on the tax system, and so you're going to see taxes go up, obviously, because the state is running out of money. Everybody's running out of money, and so everybody's going to have to come up with ways of making money, and the states and the counties have been making cuts and making cuts and making cuts, and I really think are probably getting very close to the edge of where they can't do any more cutting, and if they get to that point, then they're going to be doing some changes in how they can raise money. So I think personally that what's going to happen is in the next couple of years, you're going to see some major changes in the tax codes and the way they're raising money, and nobody's going to like that. Everybody's you're going to have to spend the money. You're going to have to, if you want those services, you've got to pay for them. And if you insist on not paying for them, then you're not going to have those services. And there are a lot of places that we can change what services we have. We keep building jails and prisons and things like that. There needs to be some changes there. We're not taking care of our people medically.
You build them and you don't use them. There's one in Oregon. I can't remember the location.
That's what's happening now. But that's because we did build them so often. Now that we've been spending the money on building them, and then they're just going to sit there. So maybe we need to turn them into state hospitals or things like that. Something that's more logical. I don't know if you can turn a jail into a hospital, but I bet you could somewhere or another.
Yeah, probably. But what I was thinking, like in this situation with you. With what's going on with Lane County, is if you can't afford to be self-insured without, you know, sacrificing what I think is the government's number one thing, which is the protection of its citizens, maybe that's when you need to start looking at streamlining, and maybe you need to job it out. If you can't afford to be self-insured because you don't meet the financial criteria, you go through an insurance company.
Well, the reason they don't go through the insurance company is it's cheaper not to. So I don't know that's an answer. In my opinion, insurance companies are gambling your money. That's just all there is to it. The stock market and insurance companies are just a big gamble. That's all they are. And don't think either one of them should exist, but that's my opinion.
Yeah. Well, I guess the big picture, which gets down to, is, like I say, the citizens of Lane County are going to be paying for the lack of protection and lack of services, like you say. But even if you expand that federally, the bottom line is it's going to cost us more and more money. We're already hurting so bad that here in Eugene, I mean, there's about every street corner, there's somebody with a cardboard sign begging. There's people sleeping literally on the freeway now at the Washington Jefferson Street Bridge in sleeping bags. And I've never seen this area get that bad. I mean, unemployment is really bad. Wages are low because that's what the market will support at the moment. And we, like you said on the onset, we just can't keep raising taxes as a cure-all. But we got to do something to start with, or something to change it. Like you say, smaller government, more streamlining, get rid of some of the duplication, and get the people to stand up and demand that this happens.
Well, and overall, you mentioned the fact that wages are not what they should be, but what we need to do is adjust wages. I mean, everybody has to be able to, everybody has to be prepared to take a cut in pay. I mean, because it's simply a fact that everybody, almost everybody, is making more money than is necessary. Now, of course, you can put limits on that as to what is bearable is the lowest amount that you can make and still live, but that can be researched and revisited, and we need to get people closer and closer to that, because we just are spending so much money on people and on benefits. Benefits have to be changed. I can't understand how Greece, for example, went along with spending more, paying their people more than they have. I mean, they offered people in government positions more money than the government took in. And how could they do that and not realize that it couldn't last, except for the fact that perhaps there are people in this government and in the Greece's government that only expected to last so long, and they were making so much money that when it was over, they were going to have enough to live on no matter what, so they didn't care. So, and I think that's what's happening right now. We've got people in our government who are making so much money that they don't care what happens. They've got, they can put it away and they can live forever. And but we've got to change that. We've got to cut down how much money our government officials are making.
Well, and, I totally agree with you. I mean, if you're okay, let's take it like in the civilian sector. If you're making $100,000 a year, you're not going to relate to somebody that's making $13,000, $14,000 a year. There's no way. You know, think that
that's the thing. The person making $13,000 or $14,000 a year, we've got to change that because you can't live on that with the prices of what's going on in this country today. You simply can't live on that. So consequently, that's got to be changed. And then, but so has the $100,000 one. So we've got to take $25,000, $35,000, $45,000 away from the $100,000 wage earner and give half of that to the $13,000. You know, we've got to equalize. And I know this sounds...
Obama. We all got to share the pain. We all got to, everybody's got to be like the socialism type style. Everybody's the same.
But the problem that's going to happen is this is going to take place, but it's not going to happen voluntarily. People are not going to do this voluntarily. People don't want to be called socialists or communists or whatever, but it's also all going to happen because the economy is going to collapse. And when it does, that's what's going to take place. Things are going to be equalized out.
Well, I tell you, the way things are going, I'm scared about the future, to be honest.
See, and that's the problem. Everybody is at this point scared about the future, but nobody is really willing to do anything about it.
Well, I think that's because people don't know what to do. I mean, Facebook, Twitter, and even shows like this one, you know, it gives a forum that people can talk about and get information, but...
I think we need to what we need to do, and I've been thinking about this the last few weeks, and I'm going to just briefly mention it, is we need to get together with other blog talk radio hosts and sit down and perhaps make up a page explaining what they can do, what people can do to maybe help out with this problem we've got. I mean, we need to sit down and come up with our own super committee of 12 or whatever, and come up with some answers and let people know what they are. Because you're right, I don't think people know what to do.
Exactly, or know that they actually can do. Like you said earlier, you call, you write your congressman, you write your representative. It's like, well, what's good? What good is that going to do? My vote doesn't count.
See, and that's the problem. You know, you're talking about writing to your governor or writing or emailing or calling or whatever. That's happening more and more and more now. The switchboards and things are getting absolutely full, and that's good. But people are sitting back, a lot of them, like just what you just said. By my vote, I voted in a person to do something about this sort of thing, and they're not doing it. So if my vote doesn't count, why is my call going to count? And so we need to come up with some sort of a way, and I'm sure if we get enough people writing in or calling in, sooner or later, our senators and our representatives are going to have to listen to them. I hate to say this, but in my opinion, we could have everybody in the country writing to President Obama, and he's not going to pay any attention because he thinks he's God. And consequently, he just isn't going to pay any attention. So we need to write to the other people around him, the ones who can do something about it, because if we get everybody around him upset enough, they will overthrow what he has to say. And
like what John Boehner did during the debt debates is he actually, and I am proud of him, I'll give him this much. He didn't just, yes, Mr. President. He actually gave the president a run for his money, or at least that's the way the news media was reporting it. And it, you know, and Obama, of course, went to the news media and says, John Boehner's not returning my phone calls. Wah.
I saw John Boehner's an answer to that, and I really liked what Boehner said, too, as well as like you were saying. Because when you sit down and listen to what John Boehner had to say, he did try to work and try to work with the president. But everything he ever did, and it was obviously true because the Republicans did come up with two legitimate bills that they passed and sent along, and the president just trounced all over them and said, no, you know, as they say, compromise to Mr. Obama is you do it my way or the highway. You know, compromise is that you change your opinion, I won't.
Right. And is that the type of president we want?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. First place, he's not done much of anything that he said he was going to do when he came into office. And, you know, I hate to say this, but I'm beginning to almost subscribe to some of the conspiracy theories that have been going around, because I look back at where President Obama came from, and I look at the different kind of things that have been going on in Illinois and Chicago and around that area, and the kind of debauchery that's been happening there for years. And this is where he grew up and where he cut his teeth in government, what little government he had. And even then, if you look at what he did as a a senator, what he did when he was in government, what short period of time he was in government, he's not going along with that now. He's changed his opinions. He's changed his ideas. He has changed what he stands for. But more to the point, I honestly believe that he is believing his own press releases. He really thinks he's God. He has gotten such a great response wherever he goes, thousands of people going to watch and talk, listen to him talk and things like that. And he really thinks he can do no wrong. Unfortunately, he's been doing so much wrong that he's going to have a big rude awakening, I think, coming.
Well, from what I've seen, though, I mean, to disagree with you a little bit, I've read about 2 months ago, he was going to go speak at some conference, and there was 900 seats available, and less than half the seats were filled. Where in the past, you know, a president coming in would have filled that podium, you know, standing room only.
Well, I think he's already at the turning point. I think he's already at the point where people are realizing that he not very many legitimate words come out of his mouth. Most of it is lies. Most of it's you do it my way. But most of it is just he makes it up as he goes along and changes it from speech to speech. And he's not consistent about what he wants to do or what he has done. And he's floundering. He has no idea what he's doing or how to do it or how to repair it.
Well, it's all sound bites. It's a used car salesman.
Yeah, I'll go along with that. And I will have to say, I'm really impressed with Boehner and what he has had to say and the talks that he's given and rebuttal things that he has done. I'm really quite impressed with all of that. He turns out to be a pretty good speaker himself. And he's much more believable, in my opinion, than the president is. And the president, you can go out there and you can just see it in his face. You can watch him give a speech, and he's mad. He's really ticked off that nobody's going along with what he's got in plan, if he has a plan. And so you're not doing it his way. And this last speech that he did, I could tell that he was just mad, absolutely mad. And he was trying very hard to keep it under control, but he didn't do it very well at all, in my opinion.
Well, and maybe that's what it takes, is to get somebody in there like Chris Christie, who is not afraid to stand up and say his opinion. In fact,
well, Christie is afraid he won't run.
Well, he's not going to run, but what he's been doing, I forget what state he's in, but I remember a video that he was standing up and the speaker was saying, you know, Mr. Christie, we don't appreciate your tone. And he just kind of said, look, guys, this is the way I am. This is who they elected, and you're stuck with me for the next couple years.
Well, I agree with, I like people who speak their opinion and speak their philosophy and speak their heart, but you got to be able to stand up and at least run then, because, you know, I understand that he never said he was going to run, and everybody has picked on him. You know, in my opinion, what happens here is the general public has chosen him, and if you're chosen, you need to follow through and do something about it. I mean, you know, he's been given an opportunity. He needs to do something with that opportunity.
Well, what's going to be the buzzwords this time? I mean, Obama used hope and change, because we were tired of the Bush legacy. We were tired of the same old things in the White House. And so he, like a used car salesman, came out and, I'm offering you hope and change from the normalcies of Washington, and I'm here for you. And so what the 2012 elections, what do you think it's going to take to, or what do you think the new buzzwords are going to be that somebody's going to try and sell, other than Obama should retire?
Well, I find it quite interesting because Mitt Romney, the man who's running in first place at this particular point in time, isn't much for buzzwords, I don't think. He's a pretty laid-back, calm leader, and for that I give him credit. I'm not sure I really want him as a president, but then I do think he could do a lot better job than the man who's in there. Almost anybody who's running at this particular point could do a better job. But the point is, we need somebody who listens. We need somebody who has an idea and is capable of vocalizing their ideas, but we also need to have somebody who is actually listening, and we don't have that at the moment. And I'm just a little concerned about what's going to happen at this next election, because we've got so many people that are upset with the people in Congress, in the House and in the Senate. I mean, I are really, really upset about it, that we're going to change a lot of them, and I'm afraid we're going to go from all Democrat to all Republican. I said before, this system doesn't work if it's all one-sided. This system is made up with checks and balances, but there are no checks and balances if everybody's on the same side, and consequently we're just going from one bad to another bad. No one group is totally right or totally wrong, so we need to have a little bit of both. That's why I'd like to have a third party in there, so that when we get these positions of one-sidedness, there is always a tiebreaker.
Well, and you also need to, first of all, not let your anger to, and I'm not saying just you, but I mean in general, the focus on getting Obama out of there blind you about the other people that are running. I mean, normally it's just like, okay, don't like him, who's the lesser of two evils, and since we can't do none of the above.
Okay, I didn't follow that, I'm sorry.
In other words, because there's such emphasis about wanting to get Obama out of office, it'd be real easy to let that emphasis blind your decision on who to replace him with.
Well, I'll go along with that, but I don't think anybody is at all, anybody who's running can be considered in the same terms as Obama is at the moment. I mean, I think everybody who's running has more common sense than he does. I mean, we sat back, and I'm sorry, but and this is going to sound terrible, but I think we put Obama in position because he's black. And I think that's exactly what happened. I think that probably half of the people who voted for him, that was probably their motivating reason for it. And we've done that now, and it was a failure, and I don't think we're going to do that for a while. So I think we're going to be more concerned with what the person says at this particular point in time on the next election than we are of anything else. If, you know, we do have a woman running, Michelle Bachmann, but I don't think she's going to get there or get anywhere because she's a woman. I think we're listening more to substance than anything else at this particular point.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I don't think that she's going to – I don't think she's listening to her speeches and listening to people ask her questions. I'm not impressed. I don't care that she's a woman or not. I don't think color or gender is really going to be a factor this time around. And I will agree with you, speaking of Obama's skin color, is that that was used as a crutch, that anytime anybody tried to criticize the president, you were suddenly racist. I think as a society, we're beyond that.
Well, I think the society is working on that. I think we've come a long ways. And I know there's a lot of people who will disagree with me. And I know supposedly I can't really have an opinion because I have not. I am not and have never been black, so I don't know that side of it. But I have not or have never been female, and I know a lot more about that, too, than people think. I mean, you know, you don't have to be something to know about something. So, but anyway, that's neither here nor there. I do think we're going to change presidents, and I think probably it's going to be a Republican that's going to go in there. As to who, we've got a long ways to go before we're even close to figuring out who, and so we've got to sit back and decide on that first. So it's a little ahead of the game to figure that out. At this particular point, again, Mitt Romney, I think, is the one who's leading in the polls. I believe Michelle Bachmann may be second or whatever. I would love to see Ron Paul elected, but that everybody keeps telling me that's not going to happen.
Although, keep writing Ron Paul up on the side of the freeways here. Anyways, 4 minutes remaining in the program. There's still time to get a phone call in, 646-721-9887. We have one person in the chat room. Welcome. And if there's something that you want to comment about today's show or any of these shows, especially if you're listening on the archives, please do send us your comments, either add it to the comment site on Blog Talk Radio or send us an email, talk@caribbeanradio.com. We love to get emails.
I'm going to have to take a break for a second. I'll be right back.
Absolutely. In the last 3 minutes of the program, Cliff goes takes a break. But, you know, that's what happens when you get older. So with Cliff being gone right now, we can talk about him for the next 2 minutes and say anything we want to, and he can't do anything about it. But unfortunately, I will wind up paying the ultimate price if we do that. So, but anyways, what I do want to put out there is a challenge to our listeners, again, either on the live show or on the archives, since a lot of the conversation was about the upcoming presidency, send us an email of who you'd like to see for president or who you'd not like to see for president, why and why not. And we'll go ahead and compile a list of the emails and discuss them on a future upcoming show. And it'd be kind of interesting to see how people think. And also, what did you think about the way that the national debt was being held? And do you think that our leaders could have done a lot more or a lot better to ensure confidence, especially in the system, in the way they've handled it, and in the world today as we're being downgraded by the S&P from a AAA rating, and others? And what do you think is going to happen in the future? But anyways, we're coming up towards the end of the clock here. So like I say, again, thank you very much for tuning in and for listening to us live. And for if you're listening to us on the archives, again, thank you very much for tuning in. And again, we're available on Facebook, Twitter. We're all over the place. So
you work very hard at putting us everywhere.
I do. And I'm working on other places. So, well, Cliff, we didn't talk too bad about you while you were gone.
Good. Sorry about that. When you're doing the program from your own home, there comes points where people interrupt. So that was one of these cases.
That's right.
I tried to wait until the end of the hour, but
stop it.
Oh, okay. been a good program. I've really again, it's amazing how fast time goes when you're doing this. It just screams by. You think 90 minutes is quite a while, but once you get halfway into it, you've realized you're already halfway in and you haven't even begun to say what you had. I actually have notes here, believe it or not, and there's things I have to start talking about.
And I can only beat Cliff up just so often during the program, too, so... But again, it's been a pleasure. We'll see you again next Wednesday, 10 a.m. Pacific time. Again, send us an email, comments. We love to hear them.
Tell your friends how to get a hold of us, how to listen, because anybody can do it.
See y'all next week, folks.
Good day.
Be sure to check us out on the internet at www.krbnradio.com or email us with your show ideas at talk@krbnradio.com. This is KRBN Internet News Talk Radio.